Welcome back, Screen Crush. I'm Ryan Airy, and today we are going to talk about House of the Dragon Season 3, Episode 1. Did it work? I know a lot of people didn't necessarily like Season 2. Got my thoughts on that we're going to get to in just a second, but you got to admit, we had an enormous battle here. A lot of complaints about Season 2 where there weren't enough big battles, and this was the biggest naval battle in Game of Thrones history. And of course, spoiler warnings are ahead for House of the Dragon Season 3, Episode 1. So we don't want to mince words or waste time. So let's bring on our guest. First of all, you know him as the intern we fire at the end of every video, Mr. Cameron Caskey. What's going on, Cam?
Hey, Ryan. How we doing? How's the Dragon Season?
Yeah, good so far. I've only seen the one episode, but we'll talk about that in a second. And of course, the writer of our House of the Dragon Easter Egg Breakdowns, Miss Harriet Lingo-Enright. Hello, Harriet. How are you?
Doing really good. Happy to have House of the Dragon back.
Man, your breakdown was great. And we have a video coming out like right after this video where you break down all the costumes of Game of Thrones. It's one of my favorite videos we've ever done. So I can't wait for you guys to see that. And of course, a regular here on the show, you know him as the guy who's always on hold, Mr. Alex Albin. Alex, do you have a second? How long are you on hold for?
It's weird. I'm on hold with my mom. We had a really good conversation by the fireplace last night. I thought it went great, but I guess not. And now I'm just waiting for it.
Oh, no.
Too much? Too soon?
No, it's a little too soon. All right, okay. I can't wait to get to that moment. I want to apologize to everybody. We had to move it from 2 to 2:45, but I forgot to change it. So a lot of people are waiting. Sorry about that. And we already do have one super chat from Phil Arumba from Down Under, which I'm going to address right now because he's been waiting for 45 minutes. That naval battle was spectacular, he says, for $8. Tense, brutal, and beautifully shot. And the death at the end hit hard. Outstanding television. How's Doug? Doug is great. And as a reminder, guys, super chats are encouraged but not required. So I want to get everybody's thoughts on the episode. Then a little bit later in the video, I want to talk about where this episode and this show is differing from the books and whether or not that's a good thing. So mild spoiler for the books ahead as well. Cameron, what did you think of this episode?
I've kind of resigned to House of the Dragon being just sort of like the better episodes of late Game of Thrones. I think the smaller things that I love with the characters and the more nuanced elements that made Thrones so exciting for me and that make me love a lot of Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, we're kind of past that. I don't think we're getting back to that in House of the Dragon. The thing that makes House of the Dragon must watch for me is the performers, the sets and costumes, and the spectacle. So a lot of the story beats and a lot of the choices that are being made with the story and the characters are not necessarily for me. But I mean, the casting director for the Game of Thrones universe is just unbelievable because these performers are so arresting. I could be watching a scene and thinking about how upset I am about the writing, but be so entranced by what these performers are able to do with it. It's just, it's remarkable. But I think of this as like comparable to Battle of the Bastards, where I'm watching this happen on screen and I'm like, wow, this isn't the type of thing you get to see on TV. As a matter of fact, if you saw this in a huge movie, this would be considered an extraordinary giant set piece in this big $100 million movie. But, you know, don't think too hard about the nitty gritty elements. You know, that's not what this is.
Okay. If
you
want to
go watch The Seven Kingdoms.
Well, I want to get to the nitty gritty elements in just a second. So hang on to that. Harriet, what did you think of the episode? Broad strokes.
I mean, I loved it. I'm a huge House of the Dragon fan, and I just I want them to keep on doing what they've been doing. I was a little afraid after the reception of Season 2, which I personally loved. I know it wasn't for everybody, but I was worried that they would sort of try to change direction in Season 3 because of the fact that some people didn't like it, and I'm pleased that at least so far it seems like they're staying the course, which I have enjoyed and want them to keep doing.
Yeah, and I want to hear from Alex first, and I've got a follow-up to both you and Cameron. Alex, what were your thoughts on the episode?
Yeah, I think I share a lot of the thoughts of the other folks here in that I actually also like Season 2. The thing that really pops to me on the show is, like Cameron was saying, the conversations between the characters, the ones that I really care about. The thing that's difficult about this show versus Game of Thrones for me sometimes is Game of Thrones, you basically fell in love or absolute hate with almost everybody instantly. Like, they just had this special True. Skill with the show of bringing on a character like, oh, that's the worst villain I've ever seen in my life. Or, oh, that person is doing kind of reprehensible things, but I love them at the same time. And House of the Dragon has sometimes struggled with that, I think, other than, say, Alicent and Rhaenyra, who are phenomenal across the board, really our point of view characters are the ones that we hook into, or I'll speak for myself, at least that's how I feel about it. But my difficulty with this premiere was it focused mostly on a lot of the characters that I have not hooked into, or I have to think for a second, wait, which sister is that? What's going on here? Which dragon is happening?
Oh, okay.
And I'm not as into the spectacle, to be honest. Like, you can have these big battle scenes, and obviously they're thrilling and enjoyable and well done, but the smaller scenes in this episode really are the ones that pop in to me, just to mention two very specifics, and I'm sure we'll talk more about them later, but the fireplace scene and the scene of Rhaenyra being locked in her room, those were two real stands out of the episode because you got to see these actors acting. And not to go too far afield, mm-hmm. but Alan Sepinwall, great TV critic, late last week, he posted an interview that he did on the 10th anniversary of, oh my God, I'm blanking on what
Hard battle. Home.
Was it Hard Home? The one?
I'm guessing. That was 10 years ago.
Where Tyrion got conked on the head and missed the entire battle that episode.
No, Blackwater Bay.
Yes, and he
Green
was...
Green Fork is the one where they couldn't afford to shoot it, so they just knocked Tyrion out, and it ended up working out pretty well.
Yeah, and it was Alan Taylor talking about that choice, as well as the fact that because they didn't have the budget, they had to do an 11-minute dialogue scene of them just sitting in a tent playing games. And that's Game of Thrones to me. That's Westeros. That's mm-hmm. the thing where, like, I get, like, prickly all over my skin and excited and alive versus watching a bunch of ships very slowly go through a pass and a bunch of dragons flying around in a circle. It's cool, but it's not the same level.
Well, one of my favorite authors, Jason Parge, and he's been on the channel once before, and I would have him on more often, but it makes me nervous because I love his work so much. He had a great video recently where he talked about criticisms people have on Game of Thrones. He said the show is better than the books, which I haven't read all the books, but his argument was there's a lot of scenes that are in the show that people don't realize are just from the show, like the conversation between Jaime and Tywin. You know, a wolf does not consider the opinions of the sheep, things like that, that were invented for the show. Lady Olenna, much bigger in the show than she was in the book. But then his theory is that after Hardhome, which is why it was on my mind, then Game of Thrones, suddenly the show had an expectation to always deliver on spectacle. And those smaller moments went by the wayside. And I personally thought season two needed more smaller moments. I didn't care if it ended on a giant crescendo. Season one of Game of Thrones, the giant crescendo is Ned Stark being beheaded, spoiler alert. And I don't think you necessarily need that big moment. I thought the dragon seeds was that big moment, but I would have liked two more episodes of the exact stuff you guys are talking about, of like people in rooms and gardens talking, you know, like South Park did when they made fun of it. But Harry, you loved it. So what are your thoughts on that? Could you have used more smaller moments?
I mean, I think smaller moments in this episode or in season two?
Well, season two had the smaller moments, but yeah, whatever your thoughts are, go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, I think I actually do agree that the big battles are not my favorite part of this show. I know a lot of, like, I was kind of hyped up for this battle because I feel like everybody was. Like, it was like, oh, it's like the biggest, most complicated, most expensive, you know, naval mm-hmm. battle. So I was curious to see it, but definitely the most memorable parts of the episode to me are not from that. I mean, I am the, well, I won't say the biggest, but I think I'm probably up there in terms of the biggest Alicent Hightower stands in the world.
Yeah, it was a good Alicent episode.
Right there, I just love anything about her.
No, I'm just saying, I'm right there too for her. That's how
I thought
Team Alicent. She has never done anything wrong. She has never done anything wrong in her entire
life. Perfect mother.
You know, just morally upstanding from the beginning to the end. But no, I love her so much. And I think, like you mentioned, the scene with her and Aemond was viscerally, like, uncomfortable. And also, I just love to get to see Alicent using her skills, like her manipulation, her cunning, mm-hmm. for the sake of Rhaenyra in this episode is really nice. I love to see it no matter who she's using it for, but it's nice when it, like, feels like a morally correct thing
well,
to do.
Yeah, because season two took her off the board for so long. Like, Aemond manipulated, and, you know, as soon as the men had what they wanted, she was pushed off to the sidelines. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so she's taking her power back in this episode and also realizing once again just how horrible both of her children or both of her sons are.
Helena is
holding out hope for Daeron, and Helena's lovely, but
apparently Daeron's really nice. Like he's got brown hair like her. Just before we talk about the Cam, like get your thoughts on the nuances here and the things you didn't like. While we're talking about big battles, I do have, okay, so we always talk about merch on here. We've got two pieces of merch that I already have in the mail for myself. I love these shirts. I can't wait for you guys to see these. This is the Dance of the Dragons tour shirt. God, it is so cool. So you got like the heavy metal looking front with the Seven Kingdoms tour. And then on the back, those are all the battles from the war, from the Dance of the Dragons. I like this so much, we might end up doing one for like other shows and battles and things like that. Like imagine doing that for Lord of the Rings. That'd be cool. And this one is my favorite characters in this part of the story, the Winter Wolves, We Came to Die. And I am, the fact that it's like Chibs from Sons of Anarchy, whose name I can never remember, but the fact that he is leading the Winter Wolves makes me so excited. They're this badass group in the winter. They're old men who go into the cold to die. And oh, I'm just so excited to see it happen. But that's in the future. The links for those are below. And remember, if you are a store member at our $5 tier, you get 15% off our merch store. Cam, so what do you think? Lay into it here. You don't have to just be nice. What's the nitty gritty about this you didn't enjoy?
I've programmed myself to enjoy the show now because I can't let it hurt me anymore. You know, I've set boundaries with the show. So there's just certain ways it can't disappoint me.
You sound like a true intern, by the way.
I mean, that, you know, we won't get too specific, but not unlike certain Game of Thrones characters, I've worked in politics for a while and you learn to set emotional boundaries in those situations. But look, I mean, I am a little ambivalent towards certain characters in the story. And I think that certain characters have felt a little bit like they've been written differently depending on what episode we're in. And it's just in Game of Thrones, the side characters were so distinct. Like Oberyn Martell to me on Game of Thrones was more memorable than the majority of the main cast on House of the Dragon. And Oberyn Martell didn't have a lot of screen time. Bella Ramsey's character, Lyanna Mormont, that little monologue, you know, the King of the North monologue that Bella had at the end of season 6, was so memorable to me. And I think that there's a lot of characters who get a lot of screen time in House of the Dragon that aren't able to make that distinct impact. I mean, it really is the supporting characters. Like there's so many characters. You go
Elena Martell. I mean, they're also talking about world-class casting too, either from veterans or up-and-comers like with Oberyn and
that's
Lyanna.
And that's just, it's on the script. There's no two ways about it because, you know, I can think of maybe one or two performances that haven't been super compelling on House of the Dragon, but not really. I mean,
and are you being nice by not naming them right now?
I can only think of one or two. I have both of them in my head, but I don't think either of them are bad enough that they deserve to be shamed like that. It's up to interpretation. But I mean, seriously,
you're so nice.
What these actors are able to do is really insane. And some of them do a little, some of them do a lot with a little. Like, obviously, Emma Darcy and Olivia Cooke are extraordinary. We don't need to talk in any more circles about that. But then you get somebody like Aemond. I think his name is Ewan. That's the actor's name.
Ewan. Mm-hmm.
He does this very interesting thing where it's like, he has a very theatrical performance of Aemond. And it feels like he's doing a different sort of acting as the other characters. Kristen Cole is so small. His monologues that he gives, I say this to people, Kristen Cole is actually the best adaptation we've ever gotten of A Feast for Crows. Because if you remember the book, A Feast for Crows, so much of it is ruminating on the consequences of the war from the first three books. So much of A Feast for Crows is almost like a reflection and a meditation on the War of the Five Kings that hasn't fully ended, but you know what I'm saying. And Kristen Cole, his monologues that he gives, his long scenes with Gawain Hightower feel like the best of A Feast for Crows in a way that's really cool. But then you have Aemond, and Aemond is like a Shakespeare villain. So one of the really cool things on House of the Dragon is everybody's contributing in a very unique way, and it makes the whole thing feel sort of like a big symphony where everybody's got a different instrument and everybody's contributing something special that's distinct from one another. But again, in terms of the voices of the characters, in terms of the words on the page, I just don't have a really good job telling one Targaryen descendant from another necessarily.
Well, Alex, okay, so you mentioned that on the original Game of Thrones, not your words, but I'll paraphrase, everybody was drawn with pretty broad strokes. You were, you know, you knew up front, like, hey, this guy Syrio is a cool character. This guy Joffrey is
Syrio's one of the best character. Examples. Syrio had 5 minutes on screen. You never forgot him.
Yep, and his speech was not in the book, to bring up another point from Jason Pargin. But given that, I kind of feel like House of the Dragon is a little bit more nuanced and subtle in how it presents these characters. There's a lot of gray area with them, maybe because we saw them as children, so we understand why Aemond is the way he is. Would you say that how does this show's subtleties compare to Game of Thrones, and which approach do you like better?
Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, certainly watching them over time, like you're saying, allows us to watch them develop. But like Cameron was saying, I think some of them, not to take any of his words, but some of them just have not developed in interesting ways. I mean, I'll call out names. I don't care. Kristen Cole is the most boring character on the show, and I hope he dies. And it's
Harry's favorite character, though.
I'm sorry. It's crazy to me because Fabian Frankel is so funny in interviews and so charming. Like,
really?
You just, the second you turn him on, turn on a camera there, any footage I've seen, any interview I've seen, he's like, joke, 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 I'm on it. And then you turn on Kristen Cole and he's like, I don't care about rape. I don't know. I just got to paint my shield. That's what I got to do.
Well,
and
he's going through it, though. He's suffering from like, PTSD at this point. Okay, yeah, it's not the most exciting thing.
I'm sorry. And this is obviously, this is personal preference, but just when they cut to that scene, I was like, oh, man. Oh, here we go.
It's just a sad, detached guy.
Exactly.
Quite the
and
this,
I
like,
don't want to watch
steamy,
a guy.
Scorned incel.
I don't want to watch a guy who doesn't want to be there. Like, if he doesn't want to be there, I don't want him to be there. You know, that's very different from what's going on with, like, say, Larys and Aegon, who are going through a very, very classic Game of Thrones situation where they're like, we had very high status and now we have to pretend to be low status and things are going to get steadily worse and worse and more horrible for us until maybe we learn a lesson and become a little better or maybe not. But that's great. Like, that's worked a billion times on Game of Thrones. I do think it's going to work here as well. And those are characters that have popped in different ways and now thrusting them into a different situation because we've watched them for so long is going to challenge them. I'll throw out one other name, which I feel bad about because I really love the actors, but part of the reason I couldn't hook into the Battle of the Gullet was that there's a bunch of characters that I've had a hard time caring about. And I say this like,
good point.
Steve Toussaint, fantastic actor. I'm blanking on his name, but he's the guy who played Father on Raised by Wolves, which is an amazing show that everybody should check out.
It is.
He plays Alan, and he's awesome as well, but there's nothing really going on with their characters now that it's Rhaenys who died, right? Who was phenomenal. But without Rhaenys, her as that rudder for that storyline, they're just sort of kind of wandering around. We get this to the point of Game of Thrones style introductions. I'm also blanking on her name. Was it Shikara Lohan? I'm getting that definitely right.
Lohar,
something like that. We get like, again, like a classic, oh, she's not a Greyjoy, but she's basically a Greyjoy cool pirate lady who comes in with this awesome introduction. And that brings up a set of circumstances that, as far as I'm aware, we've never heard about in the show and suddenly have to emotionally hook into. And that she's dead by the end of the episode. And I was like, I don't know. There's something, again, not to throw everybody into the same situations over and over, but I do feel like the difference between Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon is she would have come in, burned High Tide, wrecked the fleet, taken the Sea Snake and his children hostage, tortured them for an entire season, and then we would come out with a better understanding of her, a better understanding of them. Instead, it's done in 1.5 the episode, and it just doesn't have the same impact. I don't know if that at all answers what you're saying.
Too. Yeah. No, it does. It does. So, Harry, what do you think? Do you think there's some characters who are like underserved right now or that aren't allowed to fully bake? Or what are your thoughts in response just to what these two guys have said?
I mean, I agree that there are some characters where I feel like I'm still waiting to see how their characters are going to be. Like, I would love to for more screen time, which I'm sure we're going to get this season, with like Bela and Rhaena. I think in some ways, not to like be complete House of the Dragon defense hour over here, I think we're kind of doing it a disservice by comparing it so directly to Game of Thrones, I feel, because Game of Thrones was in its essence an ensemble show. Whereas I think that House of the Dragon is much more focused on a much smaller set of characters. And so I think that there certainly aren't as many like scene stealing side characters, but I think that that's not unintentional. And I do agree, like I think Lohar didn't quite work for me as a character. I think waiting to introduce her to the last episode of last season. And I just think that like the triarchy stuff just doesn't interest me that much. But I think in general, I find that there are a lot of, I also think that in talking about how there are side characters that are ineffective, we have listed like a lot of side characters that are very effective.
Very true.
And like Laris, well, and I think that I am actually quite interested to see what's going on with Corlys. So I think he was a real standout in season two for me. So
for Lohar,
standing around in season two.
Well, he was depressed. He was also quite sad.
He was hanging
for
out
a long time.
He was hanging out. Yeah, I mean, it's really a testament to how hard it is to adapt Fire and Blood. And I think a lot of the people who have trouble, you who are upset about certain choices. I mean, I'm very upset about certain choices, but I also want to just, I want people to understand, if you really know Ball, if you really understand Fire and Blood, you understand that there were just going to be some impossible choices that Condal and Hess had to make. And again, I think that they made choices I don't like that they didn't have to make. But at the end of the day, it's a very complicated piece of writing, Fire and Blood. There's a lot of things that, were they under the same scrutiny under which George put the Ice and Fire main books, just would not have gone down that way. There's some things I'm not going to spoil that are going to happen later this season in King's Landing that don't make that much sense in Fire and Blood. And it's awesome. I mean, I chewed Fire and Blood up. I don't read quickly. I finished it very quickly. But there's just some stuff.
It's an easy
that,
read. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just some stuff that once you take it, there's some stuff that works because you're reading other people's accounts of it. But once you're there and you have to be in the scene five dimensionally, the writers are going to have to make some choices and it's just going to leave some fans very upset. But again, I wish there was a Platinum Globe for those actors, really.
Well, let's start talking about the adaptation and by way of the characters I think were underserved in this episode. And only because I know how important they are. And let's avoid specific spoilers for the books, but the Bastards, right? So that was the big culmination of last season. It was the dragon seeds, you know, and then seeing like how coarse Ulf is. Hugh Hammer was probably my favorite like side character in Fire and Blood, the whole freaking volume. And they gave him a great setup with his wife and his dead kid. Felt really bad for him. And in this episode, they got one scene. And as much as I appreciate the focus actually shifting to Rhaenyra's children in this episode, because usually it's on Allison's kids, I do kind of want to see those guys do a little bit more. And I'm sure there's going to be more. I mean, Alice shows up, she talks to them and stuff like that. But nevertheless, that's the one thing in Fire and Blood. Those characters really pop off the page. And I felt like, I don't know, you can kind of just, maybe it's me and I don't want to spoil anything, but you can kind of see what's going to happen. I think they're telegraphing it too hard.
Can I just say, for anyone who isn't a total dork like us and just enjoys
you
the
lost
show,
everyone who's like watching the channel person, right now.
Wow, stream went down to zero? That's crazy.
I've never seen that happen before.
You can see all the Ice and Fire books behind me, by the way. So if you're someone who isn't like this, you might not know this, but because of the writer strike years ago, season two got preemptively cut. So the Battle of the Gullet in last night's episode was supposed to be the big culmination of what season two was building towards. So everybody said, oh, season two left on such a flat note with everybody getting ready for these random battles. Well, it's because, you know, very often the big thing in Thrones is the penultimate episode. And from what I understand, the Gullet was supposed to be the penultimate episode of season two. Because it had to get moved to the beginning of season three, one of the things that was an issue for me in this episode was you had a couple of scenes that really felt like the writers reminding the audience who the characters are and what they're doing right now, because it's been 2 years. So we had certain scenes checking in with characters to set the tone for the season. Whereas I think the best version of this episode and the version that it was originally intended to be was going to surround the characters in the Gullet sequence more. We were going to get more time with Jace and the other dragon riders in the battle. We were going to get a little bit more time fleshing out who the pieces on the board were going to be. Because one thing we forget, to your point, by the way, about Thrones being an ensemble show, whereas this focuses on a smaller set of characters, is a lot of the most memorable episodes of Game of Thrones have like at least one main character just not in it. Like some of the best Thrones episode, Daenerys isn't in, Jon isn't in, very few don't have Tyrion, but
Bran's not in a whole season.
Yeah, exactly. No. Well,
yeah,
Bran's also the character who gives George the hardest time writing. George says that Bran is the hardest character to write because of a lot of the magic stuff. But I mean, with all the three-eyed raven stuff, we won't go too far into.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're going. Don't go down that rabbit hole, my friend. Now,
but real quick, just to talk about 200 years from now for 1 second. The Game of Thrones books take place very close to the conscious of the characters. Every chapter is from their point of view, and it's not from their first person point of view. So
it's third person limited.
Exactly. If Arya overhears Varys having a conversation, the reader might be able to put together that it's Varys, but Arya doesn't know who he is. So they'll just say the bald man. All this is to say, you need to write the magic very in depth when you're writing Bran as the three-eyed raven, because you have access to Bran's conscious, and the three-eyed raven is all about the conscious mind being something that could be expanded so far that it is just incomprehensible. And writing that is pretty difficult. So George introduced a lot of these magic elements in the first book, A Game of Thrones. And then in A Clash of Kings and A Storm of Swords, you don't get that much of the magic stuff. It's really about the War of the Five Kings. And then by the end of Feast for Crows and Dance for Dragons, we've reconciled with the fact that George now has to answer certain questions about magic that he was kind of avoiding for a couple books. All this is to say, the reason we got onto this tangent in the first place is those bigger set pieces very often took an entire episode. So some of the most memorable Thrones episodes did not feature some of the main characters. And I do think the ideal version of this Gullet episode spends very, very little time away from the characters in that sequence and gives us a little bit more time to get a sense of the physical space in the sequence. I think the one thing that was limited about the cinematography of the Gullet sequence was I didn't have that cohesive an idea of whose ships belonged to whom, where those ships were, and where they physically are at this point. I know.
Yeah, the scale. Yeah, the scale and where they were. You know, I think all it needed was that classic Game of Thrones map scene where they're laying it out for us and saying, yep, we're going to go here. I think that the pirates, the Triarchy had that a little bit where they were discussing their strategy, but that extra visual aid always helps.
I'll throw out a visual aid that would have helped me. Different colored sails, that would have helped. Like literally if you just had red and blue, I'm like, oh, okay, I know who everybody is. And it's stupid, but when you're watching something, you do want to do those quick visual cues for everybody immediately. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought the battle though was sold more on the characters' responses to it. And naval battles are really tough because they're huge. I mean, it's not like in a battle like Battle of the Bastards where you can look at characters' faces and you understand immediately from context. So obviously when Corlys and Allen and all these people are going, oh shit, this is bad. And then the pirates are happy. You go, oh boy, this is bad for them. And then the dragons show up and people cheer. I think it was really a battle that was told through specific characters and through what happened to the dragons. But to that point, Harriet, you made a great observation in our Easter egg video. So in the book, it's very different. In the book, Jace is joined by the bastards on Dragonback and by Nettles, who people who haven't read the book don't know what the hell a Nettles is. So you pointed out this great thing where Alice shows up and says to the bastards, you shouldn't be here. You should be at the battle. I do think that was an overt reference to the fact they weren't, maybe in what Cam was talking about, they were originally supposed to be in the final episode, but maybe the money wasn't there for all the dragons in this Battle of the Gullet. I don't know. But go ahead, Harriet, tell us about like the change from Nettles to, is it Rhaena, the one who takes the dragon, and whether or not you think that works?
I mean, I think I'm also in the minority here in that I think I am a big fan of most of the changes that are being made from Fire and Blood. I think most notably when it comes to like the characters of Rhaenyra and Alicent, who are just like not nearly as interesting in the book, I find.
They weren't friends. No one knows about their friendship or talks about it.
And I just find the way that their motivations are written are a little bit more narrow. I mean, it makes sense because the book is not like only about these two characters. Like, it is a larger history. It has a lot of people to get through. But I think I don't think we needed to have the dragon seeds at the Battle of the Gullet. I think it's too many characters. They don't really do anything unique in the book during that battle that would have, I'm like, oh, I really missed it when Hugh Hammer probably lit some guys on fire. Like, they didn't really do anything specific. So I'm not mad they weren't there. And when it comes to Nettles in general, that was a character that I was initially a bit sad about the fact that they're swapping her for Rhaena, but at the same time, I think it makes a lot of sense when it comes to like giving Rhaena more to do, for one thing. I know I've seen people being like sad about the fact that Rhaena's character won't necessarily, and I'll be vague, won't be going down the exact same path that she goes down in the book, but I think when it comes to the scale of the show, and the years that the show is likely to cover, I think this is going to make Rhaena a much more important character now.
It also keeps the focus, like the Fast and the Furious franchise, on family, just by having her be in there instead of... Nettles, by the way, is just a different dragon seed who tames Sheep Stealer by giving it sheep. Nettles actually is good at riding the dragon.
Like popular fan theory that Nettles is possibly Daemon's bastard daughter.
Because she's from the Riverlands.
Makes sense enough that they're just like, okay, so it's Rhaena who is his daughter. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Which, by the way, for anyone who is curious, this potential bastard daughter, I don't happen to believe that theory, but I'm familiar with the theory, does have a sexual relationship with Daemon as well, which is not uncharacteristic for Daemon. But I imagine the writers of the show, who seem a bit more sympathetic to Daemon, seem like bigger fans of Daemon, might not have wanted to have Daemon do something that predatory again.
He marries his niece. That's already pretty far bridge over the Incest River.
So I happen to completely agree that the dragon seeds were unnecessary for the Battle of the Gullet. I think it would have just made it even more confusing because not only do you now have to keep up with which ships are which, now you have to keep up with which dragons are which.
Can I throw out there, as somebody, full disclosure, has not read Fire and Blood, so I'm definitely coming. I've read the rest of the books, but I'm coming into this clean. I think my impression from watching this episode is that if you had the dragon seeds in the gullet, it would have changed the course of the battle, potentially. It would sort of overwhelm the amount of dragons that are there. That's certainly what I took away from it. Obviously, they're still like figuring out how to use the dragons, so that's certainly an issue. But that was my feeling just purely from watching the show, was they were kept off stage because if they came in, it would have been a very different battle than the one they watched. Not to backseat right, but I do feel like there's a version where they come in that last scene and are like, oh my gods, what actually happened here? And we do get that sort of little wrap up of their tiny little storyline throughout the episode, because right now Alice telling them, you got to go to the battle, you're missing this, and they do in fact miss it, is not a satisfying resolution in this hour of television. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, they really just have a couple of scenes. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Kim.
So look, there's going to be some consolidations that have to be made, and it's going to make some people unhappy. I'm unhappy at some of those consolidations. But like I said, there's just a lot of really, really difficult things about this show, because you have to make a cohesive story about a history book that covers years and years and years at a time. And George just spams Fire and Blood with characters. Every page of Fire and Blood, there's nine new characters. I had like a legal pad tracking the characters I was reading, especially during the reign of King Jaehaerys, the old king, Jaehaerys the Conciliator.
He has like 13 kids and they all have kids. Yeah.
But one of the things that was really big as an omission, and then unfortunately I have to go because I've been working this entire time and have been, pretending to be online at my job. But one of the things that was a huge omission, and this is a spoiler for the book, so please excuse me if you were...
I think we're okay with book spoilers, yeah.
Was Rhaenyra's sons were supposed to be at this fight. In the book, her very, very young son, who's a little bit I think he's older in the, it's a rare case of a character being older in the book than on the show. Normally the characters get aged up on the Game of Thrones shows because of all the sex violence and all that. But in this case, Rhaenyra has a baby right now. It's easy to forget that because of how many things are going on, but Rhaenyra's got two babies, Aegon the Third.
With Daemon, yeah.
Yeah, Aegon the Third, whose very naming of Aegon was meant to be an insult to Aegon the, well, whatever you want to call him, you know, Aegon the True King or Aegon the
Usurper. Aegon the Second.
Aegon the Second or Aegon the Usurper, whatever you want.
Right.
She has Aegon.
Depends
who you find. Around four or five, six years old in the book at this point. And then she's got a younger, I think Viserys the Second. And they are both being transported to Essos during the Battle of the Gullet. And this is a very important plot point because that son of hers, again, spoiler alert, is going to be one of the more consequential characters in the next 100 years of Westerosi history. And Viserys II gets kidnapped by the Triarchy and is presumed dead. And Aegon barely escapes on a tiny dragon and will forever, for a very, very long time, be plagued with the guilt of what happened with that. But really, of all of the things happening at the Battle of the Gullet, the big deal was, of course, what happened with Jacerys. Rest in peace. I mean, dark-haired Targaryens can never catch a break. Rest in peace, Jacerys. Rest in peace, Baelor Breakspear.
Well, Jon survived, but sure.
Well, he had a hard time, too. Not easy to be our character.
He did die, actually. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. No, they
I was just gonna say the really big development there was the pieces that were put in place for what's gonna happen after the result of the Dance of the Dragons. So that was cut. And that is a huge cut. And I imagine George was very unhappy about that. And there's some things that make George very upset, where I'm like, yeah, George, look what they did to your baby. You should be furious. And there's some things where I'm like, George, what did you want them to do? Like, there's just certain elements of the story where I'm like, George.
When they cut like one of Helena's kids and he threw a hissy fit on social and then later deleted it, right?
And look, I'm very sympathetic to George, all right? But sometimes it's like,
we love George. George is great.
Like, the thing that's annoying to me is I'm like, George, you've seen this on Game of Thrones before. Like, you understand that there's that you have to sacrifice certain things when you're adapting something from page to screen. You understand that you have an unlimited budget for set pieces on the page, and that's not the case on screen. But I digress. I love House of the Dragon. I love George. There's a lot of stuff I don't love.
All right.
I'm lucky to be here with you guys talking about it. I have to go do my job. Thank you.
Cam, you're fired.
Oh, yeah, as always. Nice meeting you guys, by the way.
Miss you. And that was Cameron Caskey, ladies and gentlemen, laying down brutal truth about the hot D.
Can I just say my big takeaway from that is I feel like we were robbed seeing a baby on a tiny little dragon. Apparently that's in the books, and we should have seen him flying around to the Battle of the Gullet. That would have been.
He's not a baby, but he is. Cameron's right. Like, he does become king. He is in my head. And there's a particular... There is a particular thing about him, the dying of the dragons, that's really important. I disagree, though. I don't think it's necessarily vital to that part of the whole story, though. Go ahead, Harriet.
I will say, I mentioned this in our Easter egg video, but I think it's pretty likely that the events of those two kids from the Battle of the Gullet in the book will be adapted in some other way later in the season. I think it's possible that they just didn't want to draw focus away from the battle.
I think you're right.
So, like, we'll see. I might be wrong about that, but that's what I think, is that they're probably separating those two events to make them more easily understood.
Alex, you are probably feeling like I do when I hear two soccer fans talk about World Cup stuff. Like, and then he's got a good foot.
I mean, listen, I've watched every episode of these shows multiple times, all of them. I've read the Song of Ice and Fire books, the Duncan Egg novellas, Fire and Blood for some reason, and now I know after taping this that I got to go read it because I'm missing out. But to me, I was like,
genuinely, it is such a fun read.
It's
and
so
you'll
fun.
Right
really?
Through it.
Okay.
It's really good. Yeah.
Because when I heard about it, I was like, I don't want to read an appendix. What are we doing?
It's like reading this history that's being told by really gossipy people who are like, right. And I heard like, it's great.
And it's like if the Cimmerillion was intended for people to read. You know what I mean? Like if it was actually like
that's my problem is I tried reading the Cimmerillion and I was like my eyes started.
Oh God,
bleeding,
no, it's impossible.
And I felt unconscious.
That's what a lot of people don't realize, no one's actually read the Cimmerillion. Everybody just says they have.
Even Peter Jackson, you ask him about it, he's
he never
like,
read.
He
it.
Can't provide details. That's the thing.
No, he lies. You can tell. It's in his eyes. You can tell. Yeah. You can tell when he lies
paddock,
to your face.
The paddock.
I've never been afraid to look away from a man's gaze. It's natural.
I was definitely like, there were bits of Fire and Blood. I was like, okay, I'll go to bed after just like one more dynasty. Like,
and it's so easy. But I'll tell you my favorite thing about Fire and Blood. And like, I think, you know, they're making an Aegon Conqueror movie. I think that's the first movie. I think the second movie is about his kids. And then I think they're going to do that. Like, I don't think that his conquest can support more than one movie. My favorite part of the book is just when things run really well. When old King Jaehaerys takes over the kingdom and builds roads and institutes reforms. I'm like, can't, you know, I'm into politics and Sim City. And that was my two favorite things is like reading all this stuff. I loved it. But let me ask you this. So we got an interesting question here on a super chat from Armand, the regular contributor, gave us £5. Thank you so much. I really think he says, or they say, this should have been an animated series. Maybe I'm crazy for that. An animated series in this world could be so fun. Now, I don't know about this story, but I'm with you on the animated series thing. That would be kind of cool. I wonder if there's side stories even from the original show they could go into an animated form.
Yeah, I don't think they would ever do this for not even like almost reverse budgetary reasons because they do want it. I think there's a certain level of marketing where they're like, yeah, we spent $20 million on this amazing looking TV show, so tune into it. But that's a great way of continuing stuff past Game of Thrones. Like, as much as I'd like to see the live action Jon Snow show or the live action, definitely the live action Arya show.
Arya sailing show. West. Yeah,
yeah, just do Arya in animation, like an adult animated series, like the Castlevania or Devil May Cry or anything like that. That
adult?
Would be rad.
Or like in the style of Arcane, that painted style.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great, too.
And Harry, there's already, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. What were you going to say? The histories and lore things?
Yeah.
I mean, the histories and lore, like, and conquests and rebellions, like little animated things are really awesome. Definitely really useful for B-roll when we're cutting videos. I think, I would love to see. I don't think that this needs to be animation by any means. I think the performances are some of my favorite parts of it. And obviously voice acting is an art in and of itself. But I mean, the facial performances of these actors are so integral to what I love about this show. Like, I can't imagine Alicent not being Olivia Cooke's face.
Right.
But I think, like, I would love to see, like, an animated like series or movie about like the how Daenerys's eggs like ended up on the other side of the Narrow Sea. I think that's a really fascinating part of Fire and Blood, so I would love to see that.
You know what what else would be interesting too is they did try to develop a couple of Game of Thrones pilots that no one will ever see. One is about the Age of Heroes and the Long Night, which apparently is unwatchable, and gosh, somebody famous is in that too. Camera, it's not Holly Hunter. That would be funny to see in the Game of Thrones universe, but it's Patricia Arquette, I think, is in it. And then they apparently scrapped a Valyria one, like an old Valyria in the style of like the sci-fi show Krypton or Caprica that takes place like during that. I think Valyria is a place that would be so beautiful that it should be animated, like in the style of Arcane, like this painted kind of like very expensive lush where like we shouldn't be able to imagine. Like Drogon should be the last creature that sees old Valyria. You know what I mean? And you can kind of maintain the myth that way. And then actually, Alex, go ahead. I got a comment.
Oh, I was just going to throw off throughout based on what you're saying. What would be, in my opinion, really cool is like a Tales of Westeros type story where you
I thought they would do that.
Take those pilots that you're talking about animate them and have them as be like, well, maybe this happened, maybe this didn't. We're telling this tale to you. And so you get to see those things. They already have a couple of scripts there that they can tweak and change a little bit. Do them each Star Wars Vision style in different animated styles or something like that. It'd be really cool.
And the big event they will never do live action is Robert's Rebellion. And there's, you could even go back with that and do like the tournament where there was a knight in disguise who I think was probably Rhaegar, and or no, when Rhaegar took the favor of Lyanna, and like there's all like all these little things that built up to the rebellion. I think it would be fun to see those nuances. So, and yeah, I thought they would do an anthology show a long time ago. I thought that would be the show after Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And then Dave M gave us $5 and said, if you're having difficulty identifying the sales, then show did, then so did Sheep Stealer, the feral bastard dragon. So Harriet, we were talking about the show earlier. I love that they added this, you know, because originally it's Nettles and, you know, Jace does die at the battle, but this idea of making it so personal, and that Sheep Stealer isn't just feral, but, you know, dragons attached to the emotions of their rider. And she's fucking terrified. And that is, you know, he won't obey her because her fear is being transferred to him and he's lashing out at everybody. I personally thought that change worked beautifully for the show. What were your thoughts on Sheep Stealer?
I mean, I love like the design of Sheep Stealer. I think as I said again in the video, I think it's really interesting that we've seen like dragons disobey their riders so many times in this show, because that's not something that is
always
like,
the
ever...
kids.
It's always the kids. It never has come up in the book. I mean, it's partially, we're hearing a history told many, many years later. So it's very possible that something like that did happen, but we've never heard about it. And I think it makes the dragons themselves more interesting. It's like, it's not a, you know, the dragons are obviously a lot of the times a metaphor for nuclear warfare. But I think in that case, it's like, but what if the warhead had a mind of its own also, which is a little extra scary.
Games. Yeah. I mean, it is basically when a machine, when a weapon comes to life, you know, and has consciousness. Yeah. You know what it makes me think of, Harriet? You know, the line, I think it was in our Easter egg video, which is out now. You go back and quote, or maybe it was in our dragon video that came out before that, where Tyrion says dragons are intelligent, more intelligent than men, according to some maesters. Right. And they have this knowledge. And I maintain that the existence of dragons and the reason the Targaryens are even able to use them is because of deep magic tied to the Lord of Light and the Long Night and stuff like that. But it makes me think about Drogon melting the Iron Throne and how people really pissed on that idea. Like, oh, does he understand symbolism? Yes, I think he understood symbolism. I think he knew through telepathic connection that this throne is what he was helping Daenerys achieve. And that when he melted it, he 100% knew what he was doing when he did it. And I think this show is continuing to support that by showing their independence.
Yeah, maybe. I find it hard to come down at all on the side of like maybe Game of Thrones season 8 isn't actually that bad. But
I think it's a logistical challenge and they ran out of time and the ability to make it. It's got its moments.
I'm sorry. What you're suggesting is we need a Look Who's Talking season where we hear the dragon's thoughts and they're like, oh boy, get what this guy's doing. That's my dragon voice.
Only if they all talk like that. That's the only way out.
I got to send a really quick message here. So final thoughts, we're about to sign off. Alex, out of 10, how many stars do you give this?
Oh gosh, I didn't know we were doing that. I'm going to give this episode a 6, and I only say that as like, I love the show and I love these shows and they're really high quality, so I'm going to grade it on a harsher scale. 6 isn't even necessarily that bad, but I feel bad giving it. It's just, this was not my favorite episode despite some big standout moments throughout. Having seen a little bit ahead without getting into spoilers, it gets better in my opinion, like exponentially better.
You kids ain't ready for Tumbleton, I'll tell you that. I don't know if it's this season or not, but that's a humdinger. Yeah. Harriet, how about you?
I think for me, I'd probably give it like a 8.5. I agree, it's not like the best episode of the show or anything, but I'm just so happy House of the Dragon is back.
I think my points on this are pretty nitpicky as far as like, you know, why are the bastard dialogue is kind of heavy handed. There's no subtlety to it. It's like, I want a castle, you know, and they're kind of laying, he's the gruff one. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more shades there. But the scale of the Battle of the Gullet, and it makes sense what Cam said about it originally and in the last season, but the scale of that battle, and I just think the addition of Rhaena riding Sheep Stealer and being such a fuck up and Jace being so dumb and all of these characters running into battle with glory on their mind and obsessing over something. What is her name again? I'm sorry, Harriet, the pirate queen.
Lohar.
The chart. Lohar. Lohar's the other great example of that. So there's a uniting theme in there, but I agree. We've had the Triarchy for three seasons. It would have been nice if they were adapting source material that put Lohar in much earlier, or, you know, you use the crab feeder or whoever else, like from those stories. So it feels a little bit more united, but no, I'd probably give it 7.5 or 8 because I don't want this scale every time, but it was sure was a big ass giant fun to watch battle. We've got another super chat here that I think we're going to sign off from Johnny Mashed Potatoes. He gave us $2 and said, is Jared Leto to blame for the doom of Valyria? You can't blame Masters of the Universe on Jared. I'll blame anything on Jared Leto, but Masters of the Universe was not his fault. He was one of the best parts of it.
I don't know. I could definitely picture Skeletor wandering around the burnt out remains of Valyria. Like that picture is so clear.
It looks
in
like
my
a stone
head,
man.
So I don't want to rule it out is the thing.
Or a sigh with Shadowlands. Yes. All right, we're going to have to sign off there. Oh, shit, Alex, are you still on hold? Are you good?
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, my mom's here. Hello?
Oh, yes, great. Give her a kiss for me, will you? All right, we'll talk to you later. Just a sec. Please. We didn't even get into how gross that was and how it was set up for so long. And that's all we got to say. That's we'll leave it there. Thanks, Harriet. And you can find Harriet here on the channel. Alex is still here, by the way. Alex, I had to cut him off for the bit. Alex, you can find on the Comic Book Club podcast. A link for that is down below. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thank you.
And Harriet's on the channel here all the time, writing stuff. Her Game of Thrones costume video is going to come out later. It's great. It's one of my favorite videos I've ever done. It's so well researched and so well done. So Harriet, thank you so much. And we want to hear from you guys. Let me know your thoughts on the episode down in the comments below or on our free-to-join Discord server. And if it's your first time here, please subscribe, smash that bell for alerts, and don't forget to shop our Game of Thrones merch at our merch store. For Screen Crush,